The monthly. I care more about the monthly, and I want more of the monthly. I think the people who are getting lifetime are getting a tremendous value, and maybe it's a little too much, and I should.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here, and today we speak to Andrew Warner from Mixergy.com for ambitious upstarts. Firstly, let's just talk about my audience, because it'd be great to tailor this chat for them. My market are people who are content creators, and they're looking to create communities around their brands and around their products and services. Now, your website, Mixergy, is an enormous communication device. You've really created a monster there. I think it's ranked somewhere around the top 5,000 websites in the United States. I think it's the top country that you have presence in is Turkmenistan or somewhere. Have you noticed that in your statistics?
Oh, you're saying I've conquered Turkmenistan?
I think you own it, yeah.
That, you see, this is what I started the whole site for, to conquer Turkmenistan's business community, to finally give them a new internet. I don't know what actually, Turkmenistan. I had no idea that's what was going on. You know what's going on in my head as you're saying Turkmenistan? I'm saying, who controls Turkmenistan? Is it somebody who's going to have a sense of humor about me saying that I conquer them? Or is it someone who's going to see the transcripts and have a problem with me?
That's it. It might be interesting. Actually, I thought your main objective was to rank number one in Google for college is a waste of time and money.
You know what? I actually do. I get consistent traffic for that one blog post. Who knew?
I knew, because I looked it up. In fact, you've got an interesting situation there. I mean, your blog is populated full of content, so that's step one. I think you're the poster child for leveraging authority and bringing in famous people's names and also not so famous people. So that would be interesting to talk about.
Okay.
Is that a definite strategy of yours, to get as many popular faces as you can on your website?
No, I know that it'll help me get a bigger audience if I have big names, but what I really care about is studying people who can help me understand what it takes to build a successful company. And sometimes that means that a successful person is going to be open and give us a well-known successful person, I should say, is going to be open and give us insight into how he or she did it. But often it means the people who aren't as well known are going to be more useful, are going to tell me about how they spammed in the early days, or how they cheated a partner, or how they just slaved away for hours, and the clever things that they did to make it work. And I want to hear those stories. That's the big goal.
Is that your why? Why did you actually set up Mixergy?
I set up Mixergy because I built up a successful company, and as I was struggling in the early days, this was back in right after college, I built up something called Bradford & Reed. We did over $30 million in business. And when I started to struggle, I said, who can I turn to for information? And I went out to all the business books and some of the seminars that were out there. And I said, these guys just don't even get it. I'm desperate for help, but they don't even understand what it takes to build a successful company, because they've spent their lives just learning how to express ideas in clever ways, how to get people to buy their seminars or read their books, not actually being in business. And I said, someday I've got to find a way to let real business people talk about how they did it and teach others, because that's what I need right now. And I imagine that day would come when I was in my 60s and I could hire some young reporter to go out and do it on my behalf. But as it happened, I ended up selling the last significant pieces of Bradford & Reed in my late 20s. And I said, I've got nothing else to do. I'm going to go do that now and let's see where it goes.
Did you make a lot of money from that first project? Did you get to keep some of that?
You know, it's really hard to say a lot of money, because I had these visions of even more money that I was going to make. And I had this vision of an even bigger company that would last me that I would work in at least till I was in my 60s and then outlast me. So compared to that, no, I didn't. But did I make enough that I could take a lot of time off and do whatever I wanted with my life? Yes. And for a long time, I said, I'm never going to work. I'm just going to stay here. I was on the beach in Venice, and I said, I'm just going to hang out here. I'm so burned out. What do I need the work for? I'll just sit here and I'll read books and read the Wall Street Journal all day long. And it turns out that wasn't the right path for me. And eventually I realized that and I moved on.
Now, you ask a lot of people a lot of questions. You've got stacks and stacks of interviews. I know that you've got a few interviews with Seth Godin. And would you say that he's a big influence on you?
Yeah, he is. You know, one of the ways that he influences me is I remember talking to him and saying, "You're so prolific, Seth. In addition to building your businesses," and he's built several of them, "you also just keep writing books and writing blog posts." I said, "Teach me, how do you get to produce so much?" And I remember this little thing that he said that just stuck in my head, and the bigger picture I'm sure I missed. But the little thing was, he said, "It helps that I write in my own voice." And every time I struggle to write, I say, screw that. Just write the way that I would talk. And every time I struggle to present myself well in an interview or overthink it, I say, screw that. I can't create enough interview. I can't create enough blog posts. I can't do enough interviews. I can't produce as much if I'm trying to be someone else. Just be myself and let it go. And sometimes that means that I reveal that I don't even know what I'm doing, or that I reveal the embarrassing things. Like lately, I've been feeling like my hair just looks really awkward on camera. It looks like my hairline's receding and my hair just looks like this big bushy nest on my head. I don't know what's going on. And it's really starting to work on my self-esteem. And who even, at what point did I even care about the way I looked and let it influence my self-esteem? But, you know, I'm surprised by that too. And I don't want to hold that kind of thought back either. So if that's what I'm thinking, if that's who I am, I've got to just speak in my voice and about what's going on in my head at the time. And if I do that, then I could produce a lot more. And what I found is by producing a lot more, which means producing more interviews without being too worried about what I say, or if it's the courses that we now have on Mixergy, I've been doing an interview a day for a long time, and now a course a week I've been producing for months and months this year. By just letting myself go, do it all in my voice, and doing it over and over and producing over and over, I just get better and better at it. And so that's been the big takeaway that I took from some little thing that Seth Godin said. And I know that there are a lot of other little messages that he implanted in my brain through our conversations.
Well, I think there's sort of one popping through there. By the way, I like your new T-shirt. I think it's better than the vest.
My new what?
T-shirt. In the latest interview that I watched, you had a nice T-shirt on instead of the
vest.
Oh,
did I? Oh, yeah. Instead of the vest. You know what? That's the one thing that I feel I'm not really doing myself, that I always work in a T-shirt. I hate to be encumbered. I hate to have anything on that's just going to restrain me. So I walk into work with a T-shirt. And then when I do an interview, I feel like, well, T-shirt looks a little ratty on camera. I'll just put on a shirt and a vest that I have at the back of my shirt here, my desk, sorry, the back of my door. I have a jacket, two shirts, and a vest. And so I put them on so that I'll look a little bit nicer. I'm not sure if that's the right thing to do, but it only takes me a couple of seconds, and I do think that it classes up the place.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Andrew, I used to work in Mercedes-Benz, and I used to have to put on the suit and the tie every day to go to work, and the first thing I did when I was building my own business is get rid of it. I have not worn a suit for over 3 years. I don't think you should wear the suit. Now,
but don't you think, you know, sometimes I see people on camera in just a T-shirt and it looks like they're just hanging out, you know, they're just in their living rooms. And I don't want that. I want their full attention. And for some reason, I feel when someone's just sitting there in a T-shirt, I don't have their full attention. And maybe it's just a little mind game, but it feels like it has so much power for so little effort that I'm willing to put in the effort.
Well, I think you have a very strong audience base of young, slightly educated males, according to the statistics that I've looked at. Now, I don't know if that holds true in reality, but I noticed that trend. I mean, I'm perhaps, I don't know, I'm maybe a little bit older than you, but when I was at Mercedes-Benz and then went to the actual Freedom, you know, one of the things that I've been promoting in my own community is this thing of not trying to dress up and be something that you're not. So I guess in one word, you're saying you're just going to be real, but also you're now sort of putting on the show. But I think people who haven't worn a suit since they were in fifth grade right through to their entire career probably enjoy wearing a suit. It's a little bit of showmanship, a little bit of fun.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I take your point, and you're right, especially at coming after what I just said about the way that I want to speak and write. So I'm not really sure. So far, I've been doing it because it's just a little bit of effort. I've got the shirts here anyway. I might as well put them on. But But I don't know.
The first thing I thought when I saw the t-shirt was, wow, Andrew's getting a bit cooler. That's awesome. And I could relate
Andrew's
to
never
it.
Cool. That's the lie then. And
well, you see, now here's something that I think is really interesting, because one thing I've noticed about Seth Godin's style is that he doesn't really respond to or even receive comments anymore. And I think I saw a post about that where he didn't want to be influenced or feel as though he had to bend and flex for his customers. But I noticed that you're very feedback friendly. You answer emails, you've got comments on your blog. So do you feel that your audience actually manipulates you to change your content to please them, or are you still just going to do what feels right for you?
I haven't felt that. I think my audience isn't that critical, and I'm much more open to feedback because I feel I need it. I understand his point of view. I imagine would get a lot of trolls and a lot of people who just want to argue or get attention from other trolls. I don't have that in my audience. I tend to have people who do give useful feedback, who with the little bit of interaction that they have in the comments end up connecting with me and introducing me to other guests to do interviews with. So it hasn't been a problem for me. Hasn't been a huge help for me either, to be honest. Comments, I just haven't found on the internet to be very useful. And I wish that there was a better system, and maybe there is, and maybe I'll find it in the future, but it's not worth the effort right now for me to even look.
Does it upset you when people say something that's not nice?
I love it. I love it. It upsets me when people just say nice stuff. I want them to comment. I want them to criticize. I want their negative feedback. I want it. And I think feedback is tremendously helpful. I used to work at I used to go to Toastmasters courses. Actually, they're not courses, they're meetings where people get together and they give speeches to each other and get feedback. And I loved at the end of a 3-minute presentation that I gave to have a room full of people give me meaningful feedback. And I feel now with the internet, with my interviews and the hundreds of thousands of people that they reach, that the feedback that I get is just like what I got at Toastmasters, except more and in many ways better.
Well, I think you're a rare bear, because I think, you know, people want appreciation and acceptance, and most people are scared of feedback. So that's a great trait, especially for what you do. If we just shift gears for a second, one thing that I've noticed with my own community is that at times I've got too much content-rich information for them to receive. Do you find, I mean, I notice you're publishing a lot more now. You've got a prolific publishing rate. Do you find that there's too much content?
Yes. It's been an issue. I wanted to do an interview every single weekday, and I wanted to do it so that I could improve, and I wanted to do it because I knew that showing up every day online got you a big audience because they could depend on you being there. And the big feedback that I got from people who I respect and the audience in general is that there's just too much, too many interviews. It takes an hour to listen to a full interview, and I'm just publishing so many that people feel overwhelmed. As much as it hurts me to do it, I've been trying to cut back, and I don't know what the right schedule is and where I'll end up, but I have been trying to cut back. And in its place, I'm trying to learn how to come up with other content that's based on the interviews. And so I've tried getting people to write posts about what they've learned from the interview. I'm going to try doing a post this weekend where a writer pulls out 10 points that he learned from an interview and lets people vote on the top points so that we can maybe figure out what's the most useful point from an interview. I don't know. I'm trying to find other ways to use the interviews.
Well, I noticed that you've now got a premium and a free section, and obviously repurposing them or creating little courses out of that content is smart. Are you getting a good take-up rate?
Yes.
And what works better, the lifetime access or the monthly option?
The monthly. The monthly. I care more about the monthly, and I want more of the monthly. I think the people who are getting lifetime are getting a tremendous value, and maybe it's a little too much, and I should I've been thinking of canceling it because I think I'd do better with the monthlies.
Do you get influenced by the people you interview when they talk about their business? Do you then go and implement it in your business?
Yeah, a lot more ever since I started charging for my work. when I was just doing interviews, it was interesting to see what other people were doing with their businesses, but it wasn't, I wasn't using it so much. Now that I'm charging for stuff, if I hear a course leader tell me how to create a better landing page, I use what I learned and I create a better landing page. If I hear a course leader talk about how you can buy ads, I use what I learned. In fact, now we're going to start buying ads for Mixergy to experiment with what we're learning in the courses. It's made the courses much, much, much more valuable. And I'm sure you and your audience knows this in their own experiences, that when you're actually doing something, you're learning much more actively and using what you're learning. Where if you're not really doing anything but learning, you file away the information in your head and you hope that someday it'll come out, but it doesn't really.
That's one of the reasons I want to talk to you, is because I think people should be doing interviews to get better content, to have value for their customers. Do you think it's easy or difficult
to do interviews? I think it's much easier than staring at a blank blog page and trying to fill it up with brilliant content. Much easier. And then what happens is the guests end up promoting the interviews too.
You provide video, audio, and text. Was it always that way?
No, I started out with just audio, and then Seth Godin was the first person to do video with me. And what I found with video was I could really read him much better. I could see where he felt uncomfortable and change my questioning, or I could see what he was enjoying and change my questioning. And I'll give you a great example. One of the first questions that I asked him was when he came out with the book Tribes and said, you need to build a community. I pulled out a stack of books of successful people, and I said, look, here's Sam Walton's autobiography, and here's Ted Turner's autobiography, and I put a bunch of successful people's biographies up on camera, and I said, not one of them in their books said that they built a community. Why should I build a community? What if the most successful people are not doing it, why should we? And I saw he smiled when I said that, and he appreciated what I was saying. And if I was just doing it on the phone, I wouldn't have known how he took it and I might have eased off. But when I saw that he smiled and that he liked the challenge, I was able to push a little bit further and have a much more meaningful conversation with him. That's the benefit of doing video. And then, of course, once you have video, you have all the other mediums. You can do audio, very easy to convert. You can do text, very easy to convert through transcription. Boom, we have it all. And I fought transcripts for a long time, but my audience kept pushing and pushing, so I did it.
Now, I know that you have other people who work on Mixergy, but what's the reason you don't edit interviews? Is that to keep them real, or is it just because it's too much work?
Because, you know what, there's so many, and I've got to actually jump off for another interview in a moment here, but and I'm going to tell this other person that we're not editing either. The reason that I don't edit is because once you start editing, the guest starts asking for specific edits also. So then you have to accommodate the guest, or the guest feels insulted that you didn't edit this one thing for him, but you edited the one thing for someone else. Or you start to get really self-conscious and you start to edit yourself. Or maybe you're doing it all perfectly perfect, but by editing, you kill the flavor of the person and you kill his real personality. And sometimes the audience gets cues not from the words that the person is saying, but from how he's saying it. Not from the things that are supposed to be deeply meaningful, but from the little points that the guest makes. And I don't want to edit those out. Plus, it's a pain in the butt. If I want to produce a lot, I can't produce a lot and also edit a lot. And I've made the decision that I'd much rather be a producer and produce a ton. I don't know that there's anyone else on the internet who's got as many interviews as I've done, and there's still going to be many more that I do. And with each new interview that I do, I end up learning about how to do interviews. And with each new guest that I get to interview, I get to learn more about his business and business in general. And each time that I publish an interview, I broaden my audience. I get more and more and more and more new people. So that's got to be the focus for now. Maybe sometime in the future I'll reevaluate it. But if you really want to be a producer online, you've got to actually just produce. If you want to make a name for yourself online, you've got to produce.
Fantastic. That's really good advice. Andrew, I'm just going to ask you to give a listener a tip.
Yeah, here's the best tip I ever gave, and I give this all the time to my guests. Do you mind if I go with it, or did you have a direction you wanted to give me on it?
No, I'm just saying you've spoken to so many people, and you must have distilled all that coal into a diamond, and I'm just after, you know, I'm going to do what my daughter does. She says, Dad, you've read all those books. Just tell me the bottom line. You know, what's the bottom line?
There is no bottom line single answer. Every time I get one person who says one thing, the next person says the other. So I just say get exposed to as many different people and ideas as you can, and those ideas will end up inside you and be a part of you, and they're going to express themselves through you. That's the best thing. To not look for one person who's going to be the guru who's going to save you from all your problems, but to open yourself up to learning from every single person. You do that and you're going to start to really see a difference. You do the other way where you helplessly go over to one person or one idea and you slavishly give yourself into them, and you're going to realize that you're like a cult follower. Very empty, but very, very flattering for the cult leader. That's not the life that I want for the people who listen to me. That's not the life I want for the people who come to Mixergy for my interviews.
There you go. Thank you, Andrew. That's out.
Hey, can I make one other one, James? Can I come up with another suggestion? Here's a final one. Never be in the bleachers of life. Be out on the field. When you hear an interview with me here or James, don't just sit back. Find a way to connect with us and say, hey, I heard you. Great interview. I heard you. Glad that you're out there. I heard you and I'm looking forward to more. Whatever. Connect with the person one way or the other, because we're so freaking reachable today. I've had people say this. I've said this in my hundreds of interviews, and I've had people tell me, hey, I'm in China. I didn't think that your guest would have any connection to me, but you said send an email. So I did. I sent them an email. The guest happened to be in China. An entrepreneur I admire happened to be in China, and we hooked up and we got together for coffee, and then that led to lunch. Or they'll tell me that they ended up doing business together, or they'll tell me that they ended up just connecting on some other way. You never want to be in the bleachers. In the bleachers, those kinds of connections never happen. People get drunk in the bleachers and watch the real players out on the field. You'd much rather be out on the field and let the drunks watch you and let the rest of the world watch you. So here's my suggestion. You can email me and say hello, or you can email James. I recommend emailing James, but I'd love it if you connect with me too. And you should do this for everybody. Even if there's a great blog post that you read online, don't just read it and take it in like a consumer of information, a fat couch potato on the sidelines of life. Send the person an email and say, hey, great post. Connect with them somehow. How's that, James?
That's awesome. And people can reply to me on my emails. I still answer them. I'm old school, good. I think. Andrew, you've been fantastic, and I really appreciate you jumping on for a quick chat.
Glad to do it. Thanks, bud.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.